As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
Today, we'll hang out with Adam Carrera from LPL. Adam is a vice president of financial planning, and LPL covers close to 30,000 financial advisors. I'm looking forward to his insight on financial planning, what resources they bring to advisors every day, but also a conversation of, you know, reinforcing this trend is here to stay. This is a wave that advisors are bringing financial planning conversations. We are no longer a business of selling investments and just selling insurance policies. Clients want a holistic approach. They don't want financial planning sprinkled on for free on top of your AUM fee or because you sold them a big insurance policy. And when you have companies approving this at a big, high level, the question is, are you ahead of it? Are you going to incorporate into your practice soon? And how are you going to do that? So Adam is going to give us great coaching today. Adam, good to see you again.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me.
For everybody listening, Adam is the vice president of financial planning at LPL. Very important position, has contact with a lot of advisors. What was the latest count that you guys touch at LPL?
Shoot, 2,000 unique one-to-one engagements and over 500 one-to-many presentations my team conducted at LPL last year.
And then how many advisors does LPL, what's that umbrella cover?
About 30,000.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah. So I love, obviously, we believe a lot of the same stuff about financial planning, and we've been able to chat, and you know my story a little bit about coming in with really traditional approach. I just sold investments and sold insurance, and that was financial advice to me until eventually I realized, hey, I think I'm missing some things. I'm probably not giving a complete experience. So wanting to give a great experience, but then realizing, hey, there's a separate value add here that I need to learn to talk about. And then really overcome a lot of head trash to someday ask somebody to pay me a fee for my time and ideas, which to me was almost like not only foreign, but like, are we even allowed to do that based on the initial training I had in the industry? So I'd love for you to give kind of your background and how you made it into the role you're in, and then we can dive into what you're seeing in the space.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to share and give some insights at the industry level of what we're seeing. Some best practices, advisors be more proactive in the fee-for-service and advice space. But a way of introduction, so, you know, Adam Correa, I live out of the San Diego region here. And, you know, in terms of background, I actually started in this industry, I like to say the backdoor route. I wasn't a typical, you know, eat what you kill and start, you know, building a book of business, knocking on doors type of advisor. I started in the fintech space. And what was interesting about that is working for eMoney Advisor, a predominant financial planning software, I got to immerse myself in the industry very quickly as this tool is becoming a very predominantly used planning software in the industry. I got to work with many different types of advisors, from the wirehouses to the independents and anywhere in between, on cases. And, you know, what I noticed in that line of work is there's a lot of different types of advisors and the way they do business. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of advisors do truly care for their clients. And when working in that tool and working on financial planning cases with advisors, it just adds an extreme amount of value outside of what you can provide just from the investment management and choosing and picking positions alone, which elevated my skill set and got to you know, really kind of understand the industry from that point of view, which led me to becoming an advisor myself. I built a book of business around the San Diego region for a handful of years, which is a really good experience. As you know, until you're in the seat and working with clients, you know, that's the really the best way you get experience. But I came to a revelation, you know, throughout, you know, my my time as a producer, and I asked myself, do I want to, you know, work with maybe only 100, 120 clients in my future career, or is there an opportunity for me to expand outwards and impact more clients by coaching and working with advisors on some things that I've learned and some skill sets that I've learned through, you know, software adoption and project management techniques. And luckily, LPL is really expanding their financial planning resources and planning department at that time, around 2020, and transitioned over to really a full-time home office consultant role, with a sole purpose of helping and empowering advisors to do more planning for their ideal clients. So that's where I sit today. And I'm grateful enough to be leading a team of, we call ourselves financial planning coaches across the LPL ecosystem, to really engage with our, you know, 30,000 advisors, essentially, in sharing with them these techniques that you mentioned, Sten, on, you know, getting past the head trash, creating a value proposition they're actually confident in that's planning led, and actually backing that up with the client experience and a financial planning process and services that warrant and justify value, which leads to charging a fee for that.
Yeah. When you went from e-money to being an advisor, what were some of the biggest realizations you had from saying, I'm interacting with people in the seat to like, now I'm in the seat? What was some of the light bulb moments there?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, great advisors ask good questions and they're great communicators. That was the biggest thing that I had to learn very quickly to connect with clients very quickly, is understanding the, you know, how the persona works and how they like to receive information, and ask really good questions. That's nothing you learn sitting in a desk job, you know, behind the screen working in software, right? You can be the best planner there is and build out all the crazy modeling and cash flow planning known to man, but if it doesn't relate to the client, you're at wit's end. So that was the biggest thing that I learned in the transition, which really kind of rounded out how I approach things and how I, you know, share with advisors some of those experiences, is really starting with understanding who's sitting in front of you, asking good questions, you know, before you prescribing things, diagnose fully the situation.
I think that reality frustrated me for a while. I was like, no, the smartest advisor should win. You know, the one with the best strategy should win. And I'm like, I think it's the best communicator. I think there's some, yeah, you know, you need to be able to bring the expertise. You need to have the tools. Like, that stuff is kind of a commodity to some degree. But if you are the one that can inspire somebody and paint a picture for them, like comparing inaction to action, the upside of that, like, because most of us avoid speaking, communication, public speaking, until I finally was forced to like, no, I think that's the 10X play, yeah, is embracing that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really just getting comfortable with asking not only good questions, but maybe difficult questions. And clients really appreciate that, because when they understand that your intention is really looking at everything holistically, and doing that through your engagements and asking questions, they start to get the buy-in to planning, mm-hmm, and want to do more of that and work with you really as, you know, almost branded as a wealth coach, right? In engaging. So that's really the biggest thing that I saw with my transition, is just really rounding out that EQ side of the practice. And of course, the IQ is so important, and having a team and servicing to build the strategies and deliver on that is so important. But it's not relating to the client, and you don't have good and strong communication and relations with that client, it's, you know, ultimately worthless.
Yeah, I took for granted, I think, early on, like, today I want my clients to leave a meeting like excited. And I want them, if I say it's time to meet, for them to look forward to it. And I think early on, the boring kind of traditional average framework I was delivering was helping them be financially better off. But I don't know if it was an exciting part of their life or their week, the meetings I was delivering, the way I was communicating. And so with the communication, how that kind of spun into the financial planning passion you have now, the drum you're beating every day.
Yeah.
Catch us up to speed on what you're seeing. I think there's some momentum. I feel like there's something in the air. I'm speaking around the country and I'm like, some advisors are getting it and open to it, but there's still, I feel like, this level of resistance to the change. So what do you see?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good question and framing. So I think the first part I want to mention is that, when I'm working with advisors, like planning is not a one size fits all solution, right? There's different ways you can plan for different clients, and different practices have different focuses and things like that. So like where we often start with advisors is going back to basics. Like, do you understand your ideal client, what their focuses are, what they want to accomplish in their life, what transitioning looks like in major events, and really focusing on like identifying your ideal client. I think this industry, when I first started, was a lot of, almost like hunting and gathering, right? You're trying to build with anyone that, has a, financial pulse, essentially. And then you see, advisors that stay in the business and grind it out, as you were mentioning before you made your transition, get to a place where they have so many clients and so much things going on, and they're servicing too many clients, and they can't actually deepen their relationship and do planning because planning takes time. So I think one of the things that I'm seeing is, first an awareness point, whether it be when an advisor reaches out to us and says, help, I need to make a change, or an advisor doing it on themselves and saying, I'm just burnt out. I'm doing too many hours, and I know the industry is going planning, moving towards planning. I just don't have the time or the resources or capacity. So really the first step is really just doing some self-reflection on the book, right? And saying, what are my ideal clients? What's my target revenue I need to make for my practice and my team? And is that enough in my current state of reoccurring revenue in my practice? A lot of advisors, unfortunately, they're so focused on serving the clients and wearing multiple hats, they're not wearing the business owner cap for a second. And if you put on the business owner cap and take a look at that holistically, we tend to see advisors say, oh, well, there's actually a subset of clients, like legacy clients, we'll call them, that really, were sold on a transaction or maybe like a one-time event or a product that really we need to do something with, whether it be, we move on from that relationship and outsource them to another solution or elevate them to the new service model, which is what we're speaking about, that really holistic approach, that wealth coach there. So a lot of that takes time, self-reflection, a strategy as well. So we're seeing a lot of that. The other thing I wanted to mention too is, I wanted to bring in the AI conversation today with respects to financial planning. And there's so many, sides of the coin. Some advisors are saying, do I have a job in 5 years? And the other advisors are saying, I'm really excited because I can serve more clients at a deeper level. And I think, maybe it falls somewhere in between. But if you're not embracing, at least understanding AI in this industry, you're definitely at a disadvantage. Luckily, a lot of the tools and things that LPL is investing in and other third-party vendors in the industry are really leveraging various components of AI. So I always bring that up in conversation because what tends to happen is originally it's maybe a sticker shot for advisors to start to look into that. But then eventually it becomes a, almost like a side para planner to help really run the day-to-day or maybe phrase a question or a response to a client very, very much faster than they would have. So I'm seeing a lot of that happen as well, which leads me into the final point is when you have this, ubiquitous access to financial information, right? Sure. And clients can look up, what stocks should I pick based off of the top performing, X holdings in the last 10 years. And they're getting that information, on demand and as quicker than ever. So if advisors are holding their value proposition cap on selecting and picking stocks, they're at a disadvantage. But where AI can't replace the advisor is asking good questions, right? Being that wealth coach. Have you thought about bringing other things to the relationship and engaging the client in a way that we're taking a lot of the mental load off the client and thinking about things forward thinking? And that's what AI, I don't think, can replace. So that requires a lot of skill set enhancements on the advisor's side, upskilling their behavioral finance approach, right? Making sure they have their EQ on the behavioral financial side really structured well enough to make sure that it's included in the value proposition. So if I were to summarize all that, it's, self-reflection on the book of business, looking at profitability, Am I above the line with my ideal clients or below the line? And if not, what strategies am I doing to get clients either out or up on the business? Making sure, too, I'm using the right technology to support, you know, what planning offering I'm defining and engaging with and potentially offering for a fee now that I have added capacity. And then third, you know, rounding out that holistic advice space in the EQ side with more engagement and intention around behavioral finance techniques.
Those are great points. As I heard you talk, I want to unpack each one of these. So the reflect one, in my experience, as I got into the business and I first sold insurance, and I was like, oh, financial planners are, we sell insurance. That's all I knew. And then I realized, oh, no, there's advisors that sell investments. That sounds fun. And so I did that. And I was like, okay, there's advisors now I know that sell insurance, and there's advisors that sell investments. I guess those are the only two ways to do it. And then I started growing my book of business, and I started running into more clients that didn't need to buy something from me today. Like, they didn't have money to move today, but they also didn't need to buy insurance. And I felt inside of me like, am I doing it the best way? Like, am I forcing a square peg into a round hole trying to get somebody to buy a slightly better insurance policy that's maybe not the best use of their time versus the other goals they're sharing with me? But I did not have an offering to say, hey, I can still get paid. This can be a win-win if I just give you guidance, coaching, encouragement, and a framework and a playbook without selling you something. And so my first stage of reflecting on my book was, am I doing it the way it's always been done? Am I ready for what's probably coming, which is something usually different than it is today? And what's tough is, like, the way it's been done has worked pretty well. I don't know if a lot of advisors sense the urgency yet. The ones that are doing it see the upside and kind of have the vision of, like, yeah, this is a better client experience. This is a more holistic deliverable. Because if you would have asked me, if I would have met you 7 years ago and you said, Sten, do you do financial planning? I would have said, of course I do. You, knowing what you know, would have looked at my business and my deliverable and be like, you don't. Like, you talk about investments and insurance. Like, that's not financial planning. And I bet I would have argued with you at that point because I didn't want to accept I was leaving quite a bit of stuff out. Some head trash I had was like, but Adam, I can't do all that stuff for free, or I just have to sprinkle it on the top as a free benefit on top of the AUM, because I didn't have a process to deliver a full financial plan in all these different categories. And so I think there was a level of, like, intimidation of, like, hey, Adam, I think you're right. My instinct is to argue with you because I don't want it to be true. But then the fear would come in of, like, okay, but now what do I do? Like, if I agree with you that there's a better way to go and give a better holistic experience that's not a sales approach, that's more of like a coaching advisory approach, I don't even know where to start. That feels like a big mountain.
Yeah.
I know now you do this for 30,000 advisors. Like, how are you addressing that conversation? Is it mainly like a mental head trash hurdle to start, or is it more of like a process hurdle?
Yeah, it's different with each practice and an advisor at the end of the day, right? I think where we focus our time and attention, our advisors really in that movable middle category, right? They're still wanting to grow in this business. So that's where we spend the most time, is working with advisors that show motivation, show an investment in planning, but they just don't, maybe don't lack, like you mentioned, the confidence to charge a fee and the structure in their client experience and process and technology to deliver on. That's a huge undertaking. If you've been, you know, primarily product focused and investment transaction focused, you need to do some, you know, take some time and reserve some time throughout your workday to really work on developing your craft and value proposition for that next endeavor. So again, kind of going back to, like, who are you working with? Are you going deep enough with your ideal clients and make sure that you identify their persona and list out literally what you do? I think advisors do a really bad job at this, right? They're very reactive when it comes to addressing clients' questions. And the one thing I like to joke with my team, when you get a new client coming in, and if I'm that advisor that's new to planning and I'm stuck in the investment management kind of value proposition, and a client slides that investment account statement across the table and says, hey, I had a bad year, can you help me with this? I almost want to say, if you respond to that, like, almost like shock therapy, you need to shock yourself out of that and say, push that to the side. Tell me what's important about money to you. Mm-hmm. And you start reframing the conversation a little bit to go deeper and ask better questions, which leads into a better relationship leading to financial planning. So to directly answer your question, really, it's we need to look under the hood of what you're saying in those meetings to make sure that it aligns with a financial planning forward business model. And that may change. Like, you may have a foundational or maybe simple offering if it's more retirement, investments, and insurance focused. But we know that with top clients, high net worth clients, they expect more, especially moving into these next few years in the industry. High net worth clients are going to expect everything when it comes to estate and income tax planning. The good news is a lot of this technology out there has democratized scalable estate and tax planning that advisors can do in-house. They don't have to hire, you know, a W-2 attorney or, a CPA to be able to provide that level of guidance. Of course, there's still room for your team, right? Thinking about building out third-party relationships with a certified public accountant or attorney to actually create the estate documents. But when it comes to the strategy, the advisor has a lot of great tools now to reshape and rethink their offering. But they can't do that until they do that self-reflection part and really look at their book of business and say, what are my ideal clients? What's the profitability looking like? And starting to think and define their value proposition to go to those existing clients and say, hey, we now have new capabilities. The relationship has changed and how you can affiliate with our firm is a little different. So we spend a lot of time there and just making sure they get repetition in how that sounds and how that is communicated. From scripts to videos to all the good stuff that, you know, individuals learn on to build up the confidence to be able to have that conversation with new and existing clients.
Yeah, I think as I dealt with some of my limiting beliefs early on of like, clients don't want to pay for this. If they say no to the planning fee, that means I lose out on the other transactional business. I've learned now from kind of getting into the arena and just trying to figure it out. If you are not letting people know this is an option, you're kind of robbing that experience from them.
Mm-hmm.
You can let them say no to it. You can say, hey, there's two ways to work with us. We can kind of manage your money directly, or we can put you through a process and there's a cost to that, but there's a lot of value to it. It's the same as if somebody came to a theme park and you didn't even know that fast passes were a thing.
Yeah.
Not everyone wants to buy the fast pass, but like if you didn't even let them know, like some people will say, yes, of course I'll pay for that. And so I think for advisors to learn how to talk about it as a standalone offering, I think is a really important first step. Whether you charge for it or not, if that's the limiting belief is like, I don't want to give them a fee because I'm worried that's going to add friction to our relationship. Learn how to position a holistic engagement language, even if you still focus on the insurance investments, like just learn to talk about it. And then build a process to deliver it efficiently, because I think that's what I ran into is when I started doing financial planning, it became this burden. And it felt like it was taking away from AUM or taking away from insurance. And I said, okay, if I'm going to keep doing this, I have to streamline it so I actually enjoy doing it. Like it has to be profitable and efficient.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I know now how to talk about it. I have a system to deliver on it. And all of a sudden, you just turn the faucet on and just start telling people, hey, there's a fee for this. And then people just kept saying yes. And so I try to go back in time when I talk now to advisors, and I'm very confident and very direct with it, that it wasn't that long ago that I was in the way of thinking of like, this isn't possible. We're not allowed to do this. I don't have the time to do it. But I did have to just step into it and start trying to get better at it.
Yeah. I want to go back to your point you made on the positioning part, because that's so crucial. You can't slide, like selling financial planning is not a tangible service or product. I'm not walking into a car dealership and saying it's 40 grand to buy this car and I can touch, see, and feel it. It's intangible. So, yeah. That's a barrier for advisors often. And if you don't have a process and if you don't take a needs-based approach to really qualify and understand the gaps and concerns and risk in a client scenario first, before you prescribe financial planning as a fee, that's the biggest shift. So not only refining your process for executing on financial planning, but refining the way you talk to prospects, identify those needs-based gaps, right? By asking good questions and having good structure to really look at things holistically, and you'll find and pinpoint opportunities, right? I don't have, there's a lot of different risks out there in financial planning. A common one is, have you looked at your trust recently? Does it have a clause in there for payout? Is it direct or is it in installments over age-based distribution? You know, common things like that you have to have in your playbook to ask questions around with identifying your ideal client, by the way, so you uncover those opportunities and say, hey, we can fix this. You don't have to move over your assets today. We can work with you through a financial plan and engagement. Oh, and if the advisor across the street saying, hey, we're offering a free financial plan, what I can respond to that is, A, do you pay for something for free? Do you get free healthcare? No, you don't. And I probably wouldn't go and get free healthcare because you're going to get what you pay for. And secondly, how does that advisor make money? This is me having a conversation with a potential client. How do you think that advisor makes money? And how do you think their interests are affected because of that? Right? If I'm paying a direct fee for financial planning, there is no conflict of interest. I am completely objective when it comes to providing you the services and advice based off of your needs and financial goals through the financial planning process. So if you haven't really gone through the head trash with that portion of charging a fee, just make sure you know, kind of go through that internally. There's a ton of industry resources out there. Kitsis is a great one as well that produces a lot of good stuff on that to get over the hump.
I think I appreciate you mentioning the movable middle. And what I want everybody to hear also is that like LPL is, this is on their radar. Like you guys have been working on this and thinking about it. Edward Jones just approved it. Like this is here. And I think for everybody listening, you have to decide, are you in the group that's content with where you are? And so you're comfortable and that's just your goal. That's fine. Are you in a group that's like very resistant to change? Meaning like you are going to be the most late adopter because you rather avoid the discomfort, but the discomfort of change is coming. Things have to change. Or do you find yourself in the group like, I want to be coachable. I know the landscape is shifting in our business and I want to be with the tide or ahead of it. And I would say if advisors are looking for a 10X type play for their practice, not a tweak, not a slightly different prospecting strategy to get 10 new clients this year and learning to communicate and deliver a different experience and bring a new offering, a new vertical of revenue to your business that doesn't take away from AUM. The data supports like your AUM goes up. If it's insurance, your insurance sales can go up. Like it is a both and kind of thing if you do it well. This is the thing you should focus on in 2026. That's really direct. What comes up in you when I say it that way? Are you like, hey, totally agree? Or is there something else that you're like, maybe it's not fully here yet?
So sometimes we work anecdotally. I completely agree, but I try and push a little bit further. I want to look at the numbers. So when I actually took time to look at the numbers, you're not wrong in what your statement was around the advisors that are looking to almost 10X, you know, their business. So when we took a look at our active financial planner population at LPL, you know, they have a more positive growth rate, 3X or so amongst our peers. And that's a broader definition, right? You can be an active financial planner in different ways, right? But the 7, the 10X starts to come with advisors that obviously go up market and build teams and processes and services to cater to high net worth clientele. And the good news is that charging a fee for financial planning, A, is expected from that target market, and B, it doesn't cannibalize your advisory business. In fact, it jumpstarts it. So the biggest pushback I get from advisors is, well, how do I communicate my advisory fee in collaboration or separately from financial planning? And you need to work through the numbers and work through your business model to really get a good stance on that. But at the end of the day, if clients want to pay for advice, let them. Give option, right? If it makes more sense for that client in the accumulator phase that's a business owner and has a lot of cash flow going back into their business and low liquidity, I'm going to say this financial planning solution makes more sense for you at your time. Because we're going to be providing you ongoing advice with not only your business, but also how that coordinates with your financial plan. And that's an annual cost of X. But when it makes sense for you to move over into the money management space, we have that conversation and we can move their support model and pricing model over to advisory. What you've done there is you've provided optionality and approachability for that client, because many other advisors that they've interviewed say, hey, our investment minimum is $2 million to start working with us. And you know, then you have a client that's maybe sitting back in their seat a little bit closer to the chest versus an advisor that comes with optionality and intention. You know, you start to see the guardrails come down a little bit and giving clients options in the way they want to work with you.
Some of my biggest clients now came from consulting conversations, planning before, hey, move your money over to me tomorrow. And I laugh as I look back at when I started in the career, when I was like, hey, I'm Sten, you don't really know me. Will you transfer your life savings over to me and let's just hope this thing works out? You know, I was like, but now being like, hey, I'm not going to make you move anything or change anything tomorrow, but I want to put you through a process that'll take, you know, 2-3 months, 6 months, whatever the engagement length is, to show you what we're capable of. Are you open-minded to that? That's totally different than, hey, let's change all your insurance and move all your investment accounts tomorrow. Like, and that's a conversation when I coach advisors, like, I want you having that one, because the good news is you'll get the assets in a week or month or 2 months. Like, let's slow it down just a little bit to start the relationship off on a way better foot, and that your reputation is no longer a salesperson. Hey, every time Sten calls, he wants me to just invest more money. The solution to all my financial problems is more insurance and another annuity. Is no, he just solves problems. And every time I meet with him, he makes me feel better about my plan. Like, I think most advisors would say that's the person I want to be, but there's some resistance to overcome to be that type of advisor. It's not the easiest. There's communication skills. There's being a good business owner. But all of us someday will look back and be like, I wish I would have done that.
Yep.
So, man, I appreciate you coming on. I wanted everybody to hear. Obviously, you're in a big position of influence. Like, LPL is on this. One of the largest groups of advisors in the country is not ignoring this. And you're on it, hitting advisors up. So for everybody listening, we do a 2-day event here in Nashville where we teach our process and our system. But my hope is for everybody going into this year is that you stop fighting this wave that's here. Are you learning to talk about it? How are you implementing in your practice? And I loved what you said. If somebody wants to pay you, say yes. I don't know. You know, don't try to talk them out of being a client up front, even if it's not AUM right away or an insurance policy. Like, they're saying, I want to see what you have to offer. And your business should have a way for them to interact with you that way.
Absolutely, Sten. Yeah, and the other side to that too, hey, if the client isn't responsive, if you go through the planning process and you're like, man, they're not even returning my calls, they're not engaged, guess what? You just saved yourself a headache and a whole bunch of time, and you're moving on to the next client. And guess what as well? You've gotten paid for your time trying to support that client as well. So, I try and debunk any myth any head trash advisors have with this approach. And as you mentioned as well, LPL is fully on board. We're investing a lot in empowering our advisors to do more financial planning within technology and services and support. So it's exciting for the industry, and more importantly, I think it's better for the client at the end of the day, which is good.
Yeah, that's a good word. All right, Adam, good to see you, brother. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Sten.